Welcome to the Carahsoft Data Center Innovation Series, where we take a close look at the tech, trends, and issues shaping the future of data centers all across the public sector. I'm your host, Carahsoft Consulting CTO Scott Robon. With us in the studio today, we have two great guests, Jay O'Brien, a solutions architect with Equinix, and Don Wiggins, principal solutions architect for global public sector at Equinix. Don and Jay support a wide variety of public sector clients and one of the most interesting technology providers in the data center space today. We'll be touching on the importance of the crossroads of the internet, digital cul-de-sacs, their focus on physical and digital infrastructure, and much more. So Don and Jay, welcome to you both. Thanks for being here and coming into the studio. As we get started, could each of you give our listeners a brief intro, your history in the data center and internet infrastructure world, and your respective roles? Jay, why don't we start with you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us. I've been in the data center and networking world and IT world for probably going over 40 years. So I've been with Equinix for the last 10 years as a sales engineer and a solution architect, where we help customers really understand the technology today, how to consume it. From a network perspective, I was involved in the beginnings of the internet, working with a company called UUNet,
sure,
which was the first public commercial ISP.
Very good. Welcome.
Thank you.
Don.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. Don Wiggins, today a solution architect at Equinix, but like Jay, I've spent many decades in the industry in varied capacities in technology, again, for about 40 years. I'm a retired Air Force veteran, so that sort of put me in the crosshairs of supporting a lot of public sector business.
Sure.
In the role that I hold today. So looking forward to expanding on that.
Very good. Well, let's dive in. Now, we have listeners who might not be familiar with Equinix, and you really are unique in the industry. So Don, let's ask you to take a first pass of, give us an overview of Equinix, what you do, and how you've evolved.
Yeah, so again, I've been there for about 12 years. What I noticed right away was it's always been a gathering place. For the exchange of ideas. We began our role in the industry as the service provider's provider, if you will. At that time, more specifically, our customers were the telcos of the day,
right,
that were building the public internet. Jay can speak, you know, certainly deeply about that. But that was really our critical mass in early days, providing a carrier-neutral, secure, regulatory compliant meeting place,
right,
for the telcos of the day. And then that, sort of like everything else in technology, evolved over time. The cloud service providers took note of what we were doing with the networks, also recognized that many of them lived and operated at Equinix, upwards in the 1,000 plus range,
sure,
of network providers. And so the cloud providers recognized that their offerings were very network dependent, so it made a lot of sense to maybe sort of replicate what the networks did and move into geostrategic locations at Equinix to launch their offerings. So it's become today in 2025 quite literally the world's largest digital marketplace,
right?
And we're very proud of that. It's very exciting times for us. A lot of activities going on today in the ecosystem.
Jay, do you want to add to that or flesh any of that out with your UUNet history? I'm sure there's a lot you could talk about from, you know, the early days of primarily interconnect, but you've grown into so much more than that.
Yeah, certainly. So if you rewind a little bit, we're a 28-year-old company, and the early days of the internet, it was the wild, wild west. You know, people, the networks, the internet is a network of networks, you
right,
know, hundreds and thousands of networks, and they need to come together someplace so that they can exchange information. If we think about it in our daily life, you know, we don't think about, you know, where does Netflix live? Where does Uber live? You
right
know, we just know that it works. And the reason it works is because of Equinix and how it started to bring all these internet service providers together, a place where they could exchange basically network information, IP address, so that we know where this the destination is, if it is a Netflix or an Uber.
Yeah.
We operate today 275 data centers in 73 metros and 43 countries, where we really focus around the density from a network and a cloud and really anything as a service. The model that we have and where we go from an Equinix perspective so that our end users have a good experience is, for example, in the U.S., we are less than 10 milliseconds away from 80% of the population. Mm. So that really, you know, kind of sums us up and where we are from a digital infrastructure perspective, the space and the power in the data centers. And then also from that interconnection perspective where Don, you know, led us to today, where the cloud service providers and, you know, anything that's a customer may need as a service, whether it could be voice and video collaboration such as a WebEx or a RingCentral or a Zoom. Or it could be they need cloud storage, could be Pure storage, Wasabi storage. Anything that customers need or enterprises need to support their businesses, they can find it inside of Equinix.
So I think that plays back to it's always been a meeting place where communities develop. Don, is it fair to say, kind of started out by building the highways and the roads, and the communities and towns grew up along those interconnection points? Is that fair? I know it's an oversimplification, but what do you think?
No, very much so. I like the analogy. And you know, so there's always a keen focus on, to Jay's point, the burgeoning ecosystem of service providers at Equinix.
Right.
And really they sort of butter our bread. Without them, we're just a lot of large buildings with air conditioning and power at the end of the day.
Don't devalue that today, especially. We'll get into that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There requires a connective tissue of sorts to pull that all together. And
sure,
we'd like to think that we play a role in that.
Right.
But, you know, at the end of the day, as beginning with private sector and then shortly followed by public sector, they began to gravitate, for various reasons, data center consolidation, technology modernization, just a number of different reasons, began to gravitate or extend an edge of their respective networks into a place like Equinix.
Sure.
And in one or more locations. And then what they found was ease in operation of OpEx-based services, along with many of the ones that they're very familiar with. But they also found the accumulation of neighbors. You know, like neighbors,
right?
And the establishment of communities of interest, and so I like to think that that's is equally important as the technology that's made available on our platform for all these customers as well.
Can you, so take the term community of interest and unpack that? Like, so what does that mean from what defines the community, and what is that formation or the cul-de-sac right, analogy? How does that work itself out?
Yeah. So if you think about, we can just pick on a federal agency, maybe they're focused in law enforcement or healthcare, or think of all of the Veterans Administration, CMS and NIH and
sure,
CDC and so on and so forth. Over time, one or two or more of those might have landed at Equinix.
Right.
And that alone was significant to us and as well to them, and sort of game changing for their respective organizations. But what they also found is that settling into geostrategic locations at Equinix enabled them to establish private peering relationships amongst this ecosystem of service providers as well.
And that's an internet connectivity terminology, right? BGP peering.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So interconnectedness, peering, there's a lot of different terms that we use in the industry to refer to that. But it's been really game changing in that now, particularly as we look at the tsunami of AI,
sure,
and data sharing and data, data provenance, places like Equinix, we believe, are going to remain the intersect of communities that are coming together and collaborating to derive outcomes, from data modeling and so forth.
For sure. What about you, Jay, from that community perspective? What other strong positives do you see, for customers in that regard, for your customer base?
So one of the first communities of interest that found the value of Equinix were the financial markets.
Sure.
So if you're a high frequency trader and latency really comes into play,
right,
which it does, this was the place to be. So a lot of folks don't realize that we enable the market, whether you're a buyer, trader, research engine, or the market itself.
Sure.
Those types of customers sit inside of Equinix in New York and Chicago and London and Tokyo. So we basically enable, you know, the financial community. We also have others that, you know, such as healthcare, where we might have someone that's a pharmaceutical or someone that's doing healthcare records and hospitals, where they come together and they can privately and securely exchange data amongst themselves. We see that communities of aviation that come together, if you're, you know, understand how reservations or airlines work, that this is a place where they can come together and meet. And Internet of Things is another example, or autonomous vehicles, the way that they need to talk to each other and where the data lives and keeping latency low is super important.
We, as a matter of fact, just to plug another Carahsoft webinar, just yesterday, we did a drone technology and drone as first responder with 5G, where latency is also important for vehicles like that. And so that we know that not everything goes over wireless connections. They have to hit wired connections too. So if I have those drone operators with back-end gear in Equinix data centers, you're doing your best to minimize latency all across the board.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The wireless does need to terminate somewhere, right, and it needs to go to where the data lives, and the data is living inside of Equinix or in proximity to it. So we talked about the internet, but there's a 95% overlay of the top telcos core infrastructure. Think about Ethernet technology or MPLS technology. That also lives inside of Equinix. So pretty much any network service provider that goes by a customer's curb is also going to be inside of Equinix. So it makes it really easy to get from the outside world inside of Equinix, very efficient.
For sure. Well, let's take this and dive into your respective areas. Jay, I know you cover SLED, state, local, and education. And Don, you're focused on federal. Neither one of those areas is monolithic. You have a wide variety of customers in each one of those. So it's almost unfair to put one big label on each of them. But let's tease out some of the concepts of community, interconnection, data sharing. You've mentioned some examples, but let's just go one layer deeper in Fed and in SLED. And Don, we'll ask you to go first with Fed.
So one thing that becomes immediately a differentiator between Fed and SLED, although there are many similarities, and we'll talk about those as well.
Sure.
Is the notion that many of our SLED prospective customers are really seeking something that's sort of centric to their state.
Sure.
So think of state of and fill in the blank. A lot of Jay's customers are, you know, when you think of SLED, one assumption is that maybe these are smaller opportunities, but quite to the contrary, Jay manages some really complex solutioning with the entirety of a state.
Sure.
That's looking to modernize and add efficiencies to how they serve their constituency and various organizations within the state. So great conversations there. Fed, on the other hand, if you're talking to Department of Defense or federal civilian or Intel community type customer, they might be looking at geography a little bit differently.
Okay.
Right. So they might require both CONUS and or OCONUS locations.
Sure.
They might be looking for all of the above are looking for some measure of regulatory compliance.
Sure.
You know, cybersecurity obviously is a common thread regardless. Right. But there are some specific compliance frameworks that are akin to the clientele that we work with, whether it be FISMA, FedRAMP, et cetera.
Sure. Yeah, no, we see those security certifications and requirements across the board, right?
Yes.
So in the SLED space, how about you, Jay? What's interesting? What kind of incredible problems have you been solving there? And, you know, just to Don's point, you know, Rhode Island and California have different scale problems from a state perspective. Higher ed, and local governments. Also, there's a range there. So I'm sure you see some interesting things.
We do. What I see, even from an enterprise perspective or state, local, Fed customer, is that they have the same business challenges, right? They usually have a cloud-first strategy. If they don't, they're going to be probably left behind.
Sure.
And it's a multi-cloud strategy as well, too, meaning that just not consuming one cloud. And they also were trying to optimize their networks as well, too. So reduce latency or reduce costs from traditional networks, which what's available out there today, such as is SD-WAN. What I see at the state and local perspective is that the states are running a business for their constituents. Really, they become the NSP, the network service provider, for their sub-agencies. So they become this clearinghouse. If an agency needs to get to the cloud or they need to build out network, they'll go to the centralized organization and they will take it from there. And they'll be the ones that interact with Equinix and the cloud service provider and the network service provider to kind of get that economies of scale as well as control. From the education perspective, where we're really seeing the growth in the higher ed universities is the research institutions, the ones that are getting the grants from the state and the federal government for some of their AI initiatives. So the universities are coming at us hard from an AI perspective because they don't have the infrastructure to keep up with the demands of AI.
Interesting. So, you know, the universities are kind of famous for high performance computing infrastructure, and that certainly plays into the AI interconnectivity space. But the kerosene is being dumped on the AI fire. We got at least 15 minutes into the episode before we really needed to start talking about AI. But let's open that box now. So we'll let you take that first, Jay. How is that impacting infrastructure issues in Equinix? And we can kind of abstract this from, you know, public sector and Fed customers. This is impacting everybody across the board now. How is it impacting Equinix?
It is. And I'd like to talk about, you know, the customer a bit first from a university perspective, where you think about they're on a campus, right?
Sure.
And they have these buildings that may not really have been designed from the ground up to be data centers, right? They could be repurposed. They could have had built from the ground up. The issue is that they're aging, right?
And beautiful ivy-covered buildings that do not have the power, AC, or other infrastructure to hold 3,000 pounds per rack now.
So they do not, right? And that's a challenge, right? And the power that AI needs to be successful is really steepened to the right.
Yeah.
And in a university environment too, a lot of them want to get out of the data center business because it's not really their core value. Research is the core value, and they can repurpose those beautiful ivy-coated buildings for more students too, right? So we see a bit of that, but from an AI perspective is that their aging infrastructure isn't able to keep up with the demands that AI needs from a power and cooling perspective.
So what are you doing? I can point this to Don. Like the hunger for power is huge. You already know how to deliver large amounts of energy to a facility and backup, but you're still being impacted by that infrastructure growth as well.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, I got a cold call from a consultancy that's studying this in the industry.
Interesting.
And we were one of many different providers that they were talking to. And I was asked just sort of our, carte blanche, is Equinix willing and able to build out, you know, gigawatt capacity facilities at scale? And, you know, that was one of the many challenging questions that we had to kind of walk through. To the shorter answer is that we work hand in glove with the power utilities.
Sure.
We're obviously among their biggest customers.
Yep.
There's a lot of consideration that goes into where we set up shop, why we establish a presence in a Chicago or a Denver or a Ashburn or so on and so forth. And we have a very specific short list of items that draw us to a particular location. But critical to that discussion, obviously, now is the availability of power.
Yeah.
So I will just say this. I will say that in observations, public sector, no different than private sector, is grappling with this challenge, right? There's uber dense deployments of infrastructure and data being driven by AI and just advanced informatics, generally speaking. I think we ultimately, and you're seeing evidence of this now, with hybrid forms of power emerging.
Sure.
And they're in, largely in prototypical phases among providers. You're seeing the certain cloud providers and data center providers partnering with these companies that are emerging on the landscape with different forms of hybrid power.
Sure.
The key is, over time, integrating those various forms of hybrid power into the grid,
right,
to make them easily consumable. So we'll see how that transpires over time. But I think this is an ongoing recalibration process with providers like Equinix, who have a very well-established business model with how they do things.
Sure.
But we can't ignore the impact that AI is going to make on this industry, for sure.
So that's a clear issue. You know, the delivery of more power, obviously cooling needs to, heat generated needs to be removed. So that's another technology area. What else from an internal infrastructure perspective are you seeing? Do you see enterprises wanting to build their own GPU clusters and put them in your facilities? I know you can't answer specifics with individual customers.
Well, that's a mixed bag, right?
Sure.
So there's a lot of managed service providers popping up.
Okay.
And they're answering the call for, I look at them as vehicles for democratizing complex, heavy lift AI modeling.
Sure.
There's a lot of small agencies that aren't staffed with enough people, lack the adequate budget to go out and,
right,
and drop significant capex on infrastructure or where to put it,
right?
So I think they're feeling a need as this thing continues to grow. But likewise, there's many customers who show up at our door and say, hey, where can I put this? And so it's a non-traditional workload,
sure,
to us,
yep,
right? Jay will tell you that, just 10 short years ago, we were typically grappling with a customer that had upwards of 6 to maybe 10 KVA,
sure,
per rack,
right,
in a given cage that we build out for them in our data center. That's changed significantly.
Yeah, the numbers are being blown away. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're doing our best to partner with industry partners that specialize in liquid cooling and things,
sure,
like that.
Yep.
But I think this is going to be an ongoing challenge, and Jay certainly can elaborate on that as well.
Yeah, what else are you seeing, Jay?
Well, to kind of paint the picture of the power, supply and demand, is that data centers are built, typically in the megawatt range, meaning an entry level one these days is probably 20 megawatts,
right,
of power. It's roughly 1 megawatt can power 500 homes.
Right.
So if you look at Northern Virginia, which has become the data center capital of the world, Loudoun County has, yep, 250 data centers in there.
Only. Wow.
Only. Yeah. And in the state, it's about 500 that,
right,
are either active or in progress of being built. In Loudoun County, we're looking at a scale of power that needs to power New York City. Just to,
yeah,
put things in perspective there. So we are continuing to see that demand inside the data centers. So our role as a data center provider from an infrastructure mechanical perspective is when we have a service level agreement with our customers, we need to be able to power it,
mm-hmm,
cool it, and back it up.
Right.
That's the three things from a mechanical perspective. And we're very diligent about that. We have great operations staff that keeps the light on. That's a little bit separate than the interconnection story. So what we're seeing from a demand perspective, when we build a data center, we are what we call a multi-tenant data center, meaning we have more than one customer inside.
Right.
There are two types of data centers. There's single tenant and there's multi-tenant. Think of a cloud service provider like an AWS who has 50-plus data centers in Loudoun County alone,
right?
That's a single-tenant data center. But what they do is they extend their data centers inside of Equinix so our customers can consume it. But from a multi-tenant environment, when we build our data centers, we have to come up with, hey, we have to power, cool it, and back it up.
Right.
And the output of that from a design perspective is how much from a KVA perspective can you support per rack, a single rack,
right?
And that number now, when we build data centers, it's probably about 15, kW
okay.
on the newer ones that we need to, again, power, cool it, and back it up. But the demands of AI from a small, two cluster node, we're seeing that's just under 25 kW per rack.
Yeah. Right?
But we've designed these data centers to be, in the 15 kW range. We've found that we can effectively air cool for under 25 kW.
But above that?
You have to augment it.
Sure.
And there's different ways to do that. You can do what they call direct-to-chip,
yep.
which takes a fluid that will extract the heat. And then we can augment that with facility-based water too, which, it's kind of a combination of the both that can get you to the higher density that's,
sure.
75 kW and pushing 100 kW. And this is just going to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just pump more energy and burn it without removing the heat that's generated. Right. So, you have all those other issues too of you're consuming that much more power. Then you have SLAs that you're meeting where you have to be able to back up. So not only that, but you're using diesel, you're using flywheels, you're using other mechanisms to provide that backup power for whatever commitments you make in your SLAs to your customers. So,
that's right.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit about the combination of Equinix and Carahsoft. We were talking about that a little bit as we came in here today. And we, we have these parallel lives of, Equinix being a meeting place for connectivity and putting compute and storage, Carahsoft kind of being this meeting place for access to government contracts and so forth. And there's some interesting parallelisms there. I've seen some really cool small views into the partnership. I know that you took our summer 2025 interns on a tour of one of your Ashburn facilities just a few weeks ago. And I get to meet with some of the interns weekly and had a great conversation with them about that. The fact that they can go and see your facility, like if you've never been in a data center or an Equinix data center, it really is impressive. You don't really get it until you've seen it. What other benefits have you seen coming from the partnership that we want to call out here?
Well, I would say, what Carahsoft has done really well since their inception is marketing.
Yes.
And so Carahsoft has been incredibly helpful to Equinix in bringing awareness. There's an inside joke at Equinix. We oftentimes open up a meeting with an audience who refers to us as Equinox.
Yes.
Or Equifax.
Right.
Or anything but Equinix, which is kind of funny.
Are you okay with Equinix? Because I get that one too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really, what's in a name? But Carahsoft has been, again, this is what you all do exceptionally well, creating a community, and then marketing awareness and events like this,
yeah.
frankly. But I think if you look at, one analogy I also like to use is if you're a curbside at an Equinix data center, what you see is a pretty smartly built facility, very large, that you can assume has a lot of air conditioning and power within it.
Very secure.
Absolutely. Guards, the whole nine, right? But what isn't readily apparent is what's going on inside the building.
Sure.
Right. So if you go inside the building and take a tour through there, you're going to see sort of the NASCAR logo effect.
Sure.
Right. All of the different players are there, the vendors, the OEMs, the integrators, the enterprises, right? And across all of the different, industry sectors, right? Whether it be financial, healthcare, et cetera. So I think it really, where Carahsoft does a really excellent job with enabling this channel of service providers, digital service providers.
Right.
Equinix does very much the same thing and providing a home for them to live and operate.
Yeah.
So I think in many ways we work hand in hand with a lot of the same entities out there.
Totally agree. Jay, any color to add?
Yeah, certainly specifically at the state and local, education, they were never a target for us. And the reason they were not necessarily a target, we would answer the call if they called, right? But then there's the contract vehicle.
Sure.
And if you got 50 states, they all have their own mechanism for contracting. Right? And same with universities as well, too. And what Carahsoft has done really well with Equinix together and building the relationship is allowing us to attack a market, at the state, local education proactively that was previously reactively. And now we feel comfortable when we sell together that we have a way to contract and procure whatever our customers need at the state and local level. So it's been a great partnership.
Yeah, I see evidence of that internally, where everybody knows who Equinix is now. And if you're not in this industry, you need a little education on what Equinix is and the breadth of services they offer. You all have done a great job of educating our inside sales reps, our business development reps. And one thing we do really well is put on webinars and podcasts and calling people to get attendance and drive leads. So yeah, we see the synergy there for sure. Absolutely. What as we start to wind this down, what are the differentiators that you see your customers making the Equinix decision based on? I know it'd be different for different markets, but what are the big ones that that drive people your way?
I would say, firstly, it's our customers. It's the network service providers. It's the cloud service providers. It's anything from a SaaS or as a service that lives inside of Equinix. You can't think of one that does not. So our unique value really are the customers. And think of us like a shopping mall, right? Instead of going and buying shoes, hats, and socks, customers come to us to consume internet. They come to consume cloud. They
sure.
come to consume WebEx, Salesforce, you name it, that sit inside of Equinix, anything that they need to run their business. We do from a scale perspective, and not really bragging, but it probably is a bit, is that we do more interconnections quarterly than our top 10 competitors combined, right? And that really goes back to our humble beginnings of having all the network providers in there and having all the cloud and as a service providers that realize the value of sitting on top of the network so their applications function at the end of the day. If we're watching Netflix, the last thing we want to see is buffering. So
yes.
We really provide that low latency, secure place where you can consume just about anything you need to run your business.
Don, what about your customers? Anything else you want to add?
I think they see it largely through the same lens, right? It's a place where you can exercise your digital modernization initiative,
right?
And it's sort of one-stop shopping in many ways, right? To Jay's point, had a federal government customer a few years ago that I'd like to reference. I'll do so without naming them, but they were a customer of ours for several years, and they were lying dormant. They had operating capacity with funding to just sort of deliver their services. There's no real expansion or modernization forecasted for them in the near term, and then suddenly. That changed.
Hmm.
And so this organization recognized they needed a new nationwide point of sale system. They needed a new cloud-based unified communications as a service system or UCaaS.
Easy do, right?
Right?
Of course.
Yeah, easy boxes to check,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
among other things. And so the customer reached out and we had a quick discussion. And quite literally, we're like, well, you can check this box. And this organization was focused in the transportation sector.
Right.
I'll say this much. And so there were facets of their infrastructure that could benefit with proactive monitoring and management from an IoT perspective to address customer safety concerns.
Right.
And so those technical capabilities were available customers in various markets at Equinix, along with the point of sales, along with the cloud UCaaS,
sure,
and a number of other services. So it was interesting. They were able to execute on their strategic initiative, you know, within a few months. Were able to to solve some pretty big challenges. I always try to, and Jay and I and our colleagues, always trying to find new ways to sort of nutshell what Equinix is.
Sure.
There's a lot of moving parts, as we've discovered during the session, right? Yep. There's network folks, there's cloud folks, there's a number of others, you know, a number of other cats and dogs in the digital ecosystem. What makes us a little different, I think, think of Equinix and our nearly 80 locations as a string of Christmas tree lights.
Okay.
Okay. And so each light, each bulb is a service provider, a cloud provider, a network provider, a number of other different content providers, the Akamai's and the other folks out there, the Netflix. What a lot of these folks, the vast majority of them, have opted to do is permanently API integrate themselves into that string of Christmas tree lights called Equinix Fabric.
Right.
Which is this connective tissue.
Sure.
Right? Industry's first SDN-enabled global MPLS network.
Right.
That stitches not only all of our locations together, but also provides accessibility for all of these vendor-neutral, provider-interoperable, SDN-enabled service providers.
Yep.
Right. So you land at Equinix and you find exceptional ease in establishing a hybrid multi-intercloud architecture at scale, right? In multiple locations, either nationally or internationally.
Sure.
So all of that is inherent goodness of creating the center of mass for integrated, interoperable service providers of all different flavors.
Sure.
That's what I think kind of makes us unique in the industry.
Very, very good. Last question to each of you. So what do you see as the next big opportunities in your respective environments? Doesn't necessarily mean going after a type of customer, but what are you really eager to get out there to your customer bases?
I think from looking forward, right, what's right in front of us today, right, is the AI challenge.
Sure.
Right? That's front and foremost right now. I think, you know, from Equinix, we'll stay the course. We're going to do what makes us successful. You know, that we're one of the things I like working here is that we're neutral, right? We're not selling cloud. We're not selling network. We're a place where it all comes together. So we do have a unique view from the top of the valley to see the trends that are coming down the line, right? We can see, and we know what they call in network terms, the A and the Z side of a network connection,
right?
Where it starts and where it ends, right? So we
have I haven't heard that in a long time, but
we have this data that we've collected and that we publish an interconnection report every year that shows trends and growth in the industry. And we are able to take that and package it and deliver it to our customers and, you know, let them know that they're not alone. Everybody across the board, and it doesn't matter what sector you're in, have the same problems, right? So we've got that view. We've got the AI that's in front of us right now, and we're continuing to be that center of excellence for AI. While customers are trying to figure this out, we're figuring this out along by their sides.
For sure. Don, you get the last word.
Yeah, I certainly agree with Jay 100%. So AI is absolutely the inflection point that we're facing right now in the industry. It was cloud about 10 some years ago. It was the internet 10 some years ago before that. And it will continue to progress. I think also what is enabling the acceleration of adoption of these advanced technologies is the eventual maturity of some of the marrow in between the bones of this mm-hmm. Technology structure that's taking place. And what I mean by that is, for example, all of the services that are available at Equinix can largely be automated through API integration. Equinix has an expansive and ever-growing library of REST APIs, for example.
Yep.
And so there is a cross segment of our customers that have achieved this sort of maturity level with API integration, which is really sort of a short way of saying of referring to application modernization.
Sure.
Think of legacy monolithic multi-tier applications that were sort of if you pull out one block to fix one thing, the whole thing toppled. They were very brittle.
I don't want to play Jenga here.
Prescriptive. whereas now you have modular applications that are containerized and platform agnostic and all that cool stuff, right? That's moving along very rapidly. And that's only happening because the skill sets are evolving of technologists today.
Sure.
It's really cool. Jay and I, and I'm sure you have been kicking around in the technology industry for decades.
Absolutely.
And it's always fun to watch these things evolve. But think about, we've already talked about the platform of Equinix as being a largely software orchestrated through a portal system, stitching together hybrid multi-inter-cloud architectures, mm-hmm. right? That can only be done if there's a willingness between AWS, Microsoft, Google, Oracle, ServiceNow, and et cetera, fill in a blank, and Equinix collaborating on API integration.
Sure.
That's what makes a point-and-click proposition work
right.
intuitively, right?
Yep.
So we all collaborate together to enable a customer to interface with something far more intuitive and easy to consume. It no longer becomes a Rubik's Cube to solve, you know, big problems.
Right.
Because we're putting in the investment and the effort collectively as service providers to make that process easier and more intuitive. You know, so I look for that to continue. I look for the Equinix platform 2.0 users.
Okay.
Right. To become comfortable enough with SDN-enabled capabilities, and then take that to the next level with automation of some of those functions.
Yep.
Disaster recovery, continuity of operations comes to mind, among yep. other things that can be set up with automation and triggered, and tested on a recurring basis with a very minimal level of effort.
Can't really be done without automation.
No, so, yeah. no. So I think that and a number of other things are evolving very rapidly that enable this acceleration of adoption.
Well, Don, you called out how long we've all been kicking around in this industry. We've seen a lot. We've had to learn a lot. I have learned a lot from both of you today. And for folks that want to learn more about Equinix and the relationship with Carahsoft, please reach out to us. Jay O'Brien, Don Wiggins, thank you so much for being with us today. Listeners, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the Carahsoft Data Center Innovation Series.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.